News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Hey, y'all, good news about the weather. Looks like that rain has moved out and through here. It's off to the east now, east of Pensacola. We're going to have a nice weather today, and much of the week's going to be pretty nice. It might get cold tonight, but otherwise, pretty good shape. Power was out in kind of specific areas of I guess you would say, West Mobile, toward Tillman's Corner.
Almost out to Tillman's Corner in my hood. I didn't run any extra electrical components this morning, so I don't think it was my fault.
What'd you do wrong?
I don't know, but it was raining, and I don't think it was a thunderstorm this morning. We talked with Dr. Bill, and he didn't say anything of that nature, but about 3 a.m., my neighborhood, which is just off of 90, so the Knollwood and 90 road intersection there where there's a light, and also the one down from that, a little bit further west at 90 and Lansdowne, all the lights were out in my neighborhood this morning. And it started around 3 a.m., I think, and my wife gave me a call at about 7, and lights were still out. So I'm not exactly sure what happened over there or if the power is still out, but if that is the case, then those two lights there on 90, you'd have to turn into a four-way stop. But that happened this morning. I'm still not sure what happened. As I was driving in, I saw one lonely power truck working at a box basically across the street on 90. If anyone else has some information on what happened this morning, I'd love to hear from you. 343-0106.
Yeah, or hit us up on the text line, same number. So let's examine this a little bit. A pilot of a United Airlines commercial jet, more problems for Boeing, by the way, the manufacturer of this here jet. He had a mayday over Denver as they were leaving Denver, heading toward Honolulu. No, they were not going to get all the way to Honolulu, that's for sure. They just took off, and this happened.
All right, 328 Heavy, mayday aircraft.
328 Heavy, say again, please, read all that again.
Yeah, Denver departure, United 328 Heavy, mayday aircraft, just experienced engine failure, need a turn immediately.
328 Heavy, left or right turn?
Left turn.
328 Heavy, turn left heading 080.
Left heading 080, United 328 Heavy.
Left turn back to the airport, not without part of the engine failing and erupting in flames, and of course debris falling onto a city that's about 10 or 20 miles north of downtown Denver. Nobody was hurt, thank goodness. The National Transportation Safety Board is investigating the incident and has asked Coloradans not to touch debris if they find pieces in their neighborhoods. How weird is that? Meanwhile, this lady was on the flight at the time.
There was panic right away. People were screaming. I screamed. I'm a panic button, so I did scream. And then it kind of went calm.
Okay. So anyway, can you imagine being on that flight?
No. So, a few years ago, maybe a decade ago, this story would have happened and we would have had just word of mouth about what it looked like. But in this day and age, there's video inside that plane of the right engine basically in flames. Mm. I mean, you saw that video too.
Yeah, I did.
Completely wild. And I don't know who was calm enough to record that entire thing as it was happening. But did you see the pictures of the debris that came off one of those? It's like whatever that is that goes around the engine and just landed like in somebody's front sidewalk. Another person had their truck completely smashed by something that came down. So they look like one size on the plane, but once it's sitting in your yard,
it's a little bit different.
It's bigger.
A little bigger than you thought.
Just a little bit. So the FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration, they've now said that they are going to look into this, which I'd say that's pretty fair thing for them to do.
I'd say go ahead and look into it. Thank you.
An emergency inspection of Boeing's 777 airplanes, the 777s. They said immediate or stepped-up inspections of Boeing 777 airplanes equipped with certain Pratt & Whitney PW4000 engines.
That's out of Foley, Pratt & Whitney, right?
Well, I have no idea, is
it? Yep, they've got a Foley plant.
So they're going to be, grounded, these Boeing 777s, for quite a while. And it's been an issue for them. Remember, was it back in 2019 that those 737 MAX jets began crashing, and there were multiple instances of that?
Three.
Thank God that this plane was able to land. Now, I know everyone was planning on that plane to go to Hawaii, which makes this, I would guess, even worse. If they're headed to I don't know, Canada, they'd probably be fine with turning back around and going to the airport. But when you got a trip to Hawaii planned and the engine explodes, not exactly the best start.
No, not a good start. And you're right, it's probably still another 8 hours or so from Denver to Hawaii.
And then do you get back on a plane after that happens?
You're asked if you'd like to.
Yeah. I mean, the statistics, odds are you're not going to be on two planes that happens in. But it'd be tough for me to get back up in the air. But that brought to mind something I was reading over the weekend. So there's this new book coming out, and it's called After: A Doctor Explores What Near-Death Experiences Reveal About Life and Beyond. It was written by this Dr. Bruce Grayson, who has dealt with a number of people who have had near-death experiences. And he said that, according to his research, near-death experiences are fairly common. I think a lot of the people in that plane over the weekend felt that they were having a near-death experience.
They had one.
He said some 10 to 20% of people who come close to death report them. That's about 5% of the population at large. So he says about 5% of people have had a near-death experience. And he said there's a few different elements that happen when you feel like you're going through a near-death experience. He said 80% say they feel that they have left their body.
Wow.
Which, I mean, I can't even imagine what that would feel like. He also had some other stats here, and one of those was that it makes sense, you know, but some of these people that have had near-death experiences, it has really changed their life moving forward. They feel that they live life differently after having that near-death experience, and it got me thinking, I don't know if I mean, I'm sure I've had a near-death experience, but it's never been anything so obvious to me. I've never, you know, left my body or anything like he was talking about here. I think maybe the closest was my daughter. I think I thought she was having a near-death experience a couple years ago, and she was she was having a seizure, but it looked to me like she was like dying, not breathing. That was probably the most scared moment of my life, and I do think it changed my life going forward, even minimally. But I can't say that I've personally had one.
What do they? How do they? Define a near-death experience.
It would be an experience you had where you are certain that if things had gone one way or the other, that you would be lying dead right now.
So that would be with those people on the airliner felt likely.
I would say so. Wouldn't you think so?
Yeah,
I would look out. And,
you know, we've all had those, you almost merge into the left lane and realize that a semi's on top of you. That's essentially a near-death experience.
Yeah.
But we kind of get over it quickly. You're in traffic and so that's not really one that would change the way I'm living the rest of my life. I don't think I've ever had anything like that. I've had some unpleasant things happen to me in 63 years, for sure.
Yeah.
I've been robbed at gunpoint.
Ooh.
That was, but I you know, it happened very quickly. Maybe it was all over in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
So I never really felt like it was a near-death experience, though it would be interesting to see what our callers think about that.
Yeah, I'm interested because if this doctor says that 5% of the population has definitely had near-death experiences, and for most of them, they've changed their lives going forward, that means that certainly people in our listening audience
would have
had those near-death experiences. So shoot us a text or call us, 343-0106.
If you've had a near-death experience, love to hear from you. You want to get to David before
the break? Yeah, let's talk with David. He knows his planes.
He knows what's going on. David, what's going on, man?
Hey, guys. The engine exploding in midair during takeoff, that's why you want your pilot to have gray hair.
Yeah, no kidding. No rookies on the job, right?
The pilot did exactly what he was supposed to do in getting that plane back on the ground as quickly as possible and safely as possible. But Pratt & Whitney does have a factory out at the Foley Airport that builds engines for the Airbus A320 facility here in Mobile. But they're a part of a bigger company called Raytheon. You may have heard them,
yes.
Heard of them or not.
Yeah, we have, yeah.
Listen. You're not going to find anybody that walks the face of the earth that dislikes Boeing more than me, and I love trashing Boeing, but this isn't going to end up being a Boeing problem. This is going to end up being an engine problem.
Let me ask you this. Quickly before we go to break, can you recall in your lifetime any near-death experiences?
Mine is similar to yours, and when I was robbed at Knife Point several years ago.
I think Knife Point is a little more frightening than Gunpoint, to be honest with you.
You think so?
You have to activate the gun. The knife just starts stabbing.
Yeah.
Well, David, we're glad to hear you for a number of reasons. Glad you're well.
Thank you, sir.
FM Talk 106.5.
Yeah, give us a call or text, 343-0106. And Governor Ivey, she's done with the turkey talk. We're moving on to turtles coming
and
up.
Tortoises. Morning from Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwick, FM Talk 106.5. It is 8:21. Hit us up on the text line or call if you have had a near-death experience, 343-0106. For a lot of people, it changes the way they live the rest of their lives, which, I if that's what a near-death experience is, then I haven't had one.
Right.
Because nothing has profoundly changed me in a way like that one event made me now live this way.
Yeah.
Hasn't happened.
I feel like the most common near-death experience has to be in a hospital, right? Where you, if something happens to your body, whether it's a heart attack or a stroke or something like that, I think that would be the most obvious thing where you're like, wow, I almost, especially when you have a doctor there to say, you almost died. But there's no telling how many near-death experiences I've had, without knowing it. I rode bulls for a time. I don't know if I told you that.
No!
Yeah, I was a junior bull rider. So it wasn't the 2,000-pound bulls. They were like 1,200 pounds. Still, to me, that was quite a big animal to be riding. But I got stomped on. I got hung up. And still, I wouldn't consider that a near-death experience. I don't know. The closest I've had was my daughter, for sure. That was the scariest time I've ever been through. And that was her. That wasn't me at all. I would say that changed my life, but some of these people that said they've actually left their body, they've had like an outer body experience, that's just something I've never had.
Back to the bull riding. Why did your parents hate you so? I mean, there's parents that won't let their kids go out for youth football now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They have their, and they're concerned about even basketball with elbows being thrown. You were on the back of a bull.
Yeah. Yeah. What but age? I wasn't allowed to play football. No, I'm just joking. I played all of them. So I was, I don't know, it was 10? Seventh or eighth grade.
Okay.
Yeah. So I was probably, I don't know what age kids are nowadays in that.
12, 13.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was the Alabama Junior Rodeo Association. Had a fun time. I was not good at it at all, but it certainly gave me some things to talk about.
Well, it's like anything else. It's like when you see gymnasts do these incredible things and you think, when's the first time they tried that?
Yeah.
So what was it like the first time you were on a bull? Were you petrified?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Petrified. I think I actually started on steers before I moved into junior bulls.
Did you have your cowboy hat on?
Yeah, of course. Actually, I think they made me wear a helmet.
Yeah, they should.
But outside of the ring, I had the cowboy hat on. Actually, the worst injury happened to my dad while I was riding the bulls.
What happened?
So he was on the gate pulling my rope tight, mm-hmm. and the person next to us, who was on an actual big bull, went out before I did, and that gate swung all the way open, and my dad is on the inside of the arena, his knees up against the gate that I'm on. Gate slams into the back of his legs and into the bull pushes the gate open.
Wow.
Slams into the back of his legs, completely tore his knee up, like all the way. And he's the one who had the worst bull riding experience, but I was the one that was actually on the back of him.
Wow.
Crazy. But no near-death experiences. I know Sly Dog says, I taught three children how to drive cars over the years. That's as close to near-death as you can get. Philip said, I said something about my wife's weight one time. My soul definitely left my body. Hashtag near-death experience. Oh, Jim says, I was hit by a train in 1982 when I was 19 years old, and I lived through it and would not ever want to do that again. I would say so, Jim. He said, I was young and foolish, but that stayed with me throughout my life, and I realized after I accepted Christ that God was with me at that time. I can't imagine getting hit by a train.
Was
living
he?
Through it.
Now, he doesn't mention that he was in a car at the time. You would have to assume. Yeah. I mean, if you just get hit by a train like you're in a cartoon, you're going to get flattened. It's Jim would not be texting us right now if he personally
got
hit by
a train. Just winged him, yeah.
So we assume that Jim was in the car at the time. And you hear those commercials, those PSAs all the time don't try and beat the train. Not a good idea.
You get stuck. And some fellow former bull riders weighing in here. BJ said, I also rode bulls, and like you, I got hung up, stepped on, headbutted, but I never had a near-death experience from it. And
Jim follows up, in a car, laugh out loud.
It was in a car. So
thank you, Jim.
Good text coming through this morning. And
we did assume so.
Keep those rolling, 343-01. You assumed so. I thought he got hit outside of the vehicle.
Hey, let's go from steers and bulls to turtles.
Yeah, let's talk turtles. So Jeff Poor, of course, Jeff Poor show coming up at 9 a.m. following this show. This morning, he was working over the weekend, as he does, and so we don't have to. Jeff watched Alabama Public Television's Capital Journal
this
weekend.
Friday night.
Governor Kay Ivey was on this week, and she had plenty to talk about. Of course, she was talking about the COVID-19 vaccine rollout and also where we are with masks and social distancing and things of that nature. Well, while she's on Alabama Public Television or, you know, living in the governor's mansion, the legislature right now is working on a number of bills, and we'll talk about that throughout this week. The gambling bill that's been put out there by Senator Del Marsh, the medical marijuana bill that's floating around out there. I mean, there's a ton of stuff the legislature has to get to. But a couple of those proposals come from one from the House and one from a state senator. And this has to do with Governor Ivey's power during emergency situations. These two proposals would add checks to the executive branch authority under declared emergencies. One proposal is coming out of the House. This is State Representative Becky Nordgren out of Gadsden. Now, she was on the Jeff Poor Show on Friday and talked about this bill, but it would allow the legislature to call itself into session, not depending on the governor for calling them into session. Another bill, which is being headed by State Senator Tom Watley, would limit the length of a state emergency and also the state health officer's power. That's been something that has been discussed a lot since last March. How much power does Dr. Scott Harris have over what's actually going on in the state?
Yeah, Governor Ivey, Scott Harris, since the pandemic, those are the two that, of course, have called a lot of the shots.
So Governor Ivey was asked about these two proposals on Capital Journal on Friday night. Here's what, and she compared herself to Nick Saban here. Listen to this.
Well, the reason that the executive branch has been given the authority to act in emergencies is because it is an emergency. If Coach Saban has a decision to make on the football field, does he call all his assistant coaches, the trustees, and the administration together to have? No. The coach makes the decision. Can you imagine trying to get 140 legislators who are not in town, who don't work full time, back into session in order to adopt an emergency situation and make an emergency decision?
Feels like a little sassy answer there from Governor Ivey.
Hey, at least she's aware enough of current events where she did not go the Gus Malzahn. She's an Auburn grad, so if she was unaware that Malzahn had been replaced, that would have been even worse.
Yeah, it would have been worse.
Do you think Gus Malzahn?
If I were the host there, I would have said, Nick Saban, who are you talking about?
Who are we talking about?
It would have completely
here?
Confused the governor. She also, of course, you've heard the quote from Thanksgiving. I think it was 3 years ago at this point, 2 or 3 years ago, when she pardoned the turkeys, and she said, no step too high for a high stepper.
It's on Sean Sullivan. It's the beginning of Sean Sullivan, his midday mobile every day.
I think Ivy was kind of tired of that playing and said, you know, I need to replace that. Something new, something fresh. So while talking about her power during emergency situations, she brought up turtles.
The legislature always likes to have their time and their say, and that's fine, but in an emergency, you don't need a herd of turtles gathering to make an emergency decision.
You don't need a herd of turtles gathering to make an emergency decision. Just it's just too much. But
just a random sort of analogy.
She went with the herd of turtles.
Yeah, she did. She could have gone anywhere with that. But
not snails. I don't know. Lots of sloths. She could have gone with anything. She went with a herd of turtles. But I don't know. I could see both sides of this debate, I guess. But when she says getting 140 legislators together to make a decision on an emergency basis, would you consider what's happening in the state as far as COVID goes? I mean, I know it's an emergency, but the length of time we've been under this emergency, and before she even put in the mask ordinance and the safer at home ordinance,
sure,
she and Dr. Harris, there was plenty of time to call a session together, and then if they're not able to work anything out, maybe make an executive decision from there. But sounds like she kind of likes the power there in Montgomery.
Well, and also, but you got to say that COVID had played a factor in people convening to meet at the state house too.
That's true too.
It is 8:30 FM Talk 106.5.
FM Talk 106.5. Listening to Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig. Let's head over to McConnell Automotive and talk with Louis Arata. Hey, Louis.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Hey, doing great. And, man, February has flown by. I can't believe we're in the last week of the month now, and that means time to get over to McConnell for a great deal.
That's right. It's the end of the month, and we got some great deals going on. We got to get rid of a few cars. Got a few old age on the used car side. We got some deals working on those right now. So, You can check all those out online at McConnellAutomotive.com. If you got any questions on any of them, give us a call, 251-476-4141. We'll send you a little video of them and make you just fall in love with them.
That's awesome. And you guys still buying cars, too?
That's right. We'll buy. Just give us the VIN number and the miles. Just call Gene or I. That's like the number, 251-476-4141. We'll give you a price right over the telephone.
That's perfect. And weather looking great this week, and the lot is stocked, so a good time to get out to McConnell. We appreciate it, Louie.
Thank you.
That's Louie Arata. You'll find him at McConnell Automotive on Dauphin Street, just east of I-65, and online, McConnellAutomotive.com.
It is 8:37 at FM Talk 106.5. We were talking earlier this hour about near-death experiences. Who chimed in with he was eaten by a shark when he was 7 years old? And then he said,
what?
And it was like, so I replied to him, you escaped? You were in the shark and you escaped? And he said, I was just trying to come up with the most outrageous story. Right, well, thank you for that. Anyway, it's pretty funny, some of the texts we're getting on near-death experiences.
Oh, that's not nice of you. Some of these aren't funny at all, Dan.
Well, I agree.
Buck here, I can't imagine. He said, while surfing 15 to 20-foot surf in Hawaii, holy cow, first off, he said, my leash got caught on a reef head, and I was trapped underwater. After 30 or 40 seconds, I was able to reach my ankle and release it. So he was trapped underwater, stuck on a reef, and he said, air is good. I can imagine so after 40 seconds of being stuck under the water. That's insane.
That's like some sudden, out of nowhere, Navy SEAL training right there.
Yeah.
Can you get out or can you not? Oof. Buck, we're glad you're with us.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And then we're getting a lot of texts about Governor Ivey's comment about the herd of turtles. If you missed it, here's the audio from Governor Ivey over the weekend on Capital Journal saying that getting legislators together in an emergency is like herding turtles, I guess.
The legislature always likes to have their time and their say, and that's fine. But in an emergency, you don't need a herd of turtles gathering to make an emergency decision.
The herd of turtles. So many people asking, do you call a group of turtles a herd?
Do you?
And I looked it up. Well, I didn't really have to look it up. Fred texted in. He said, it's actually called a bale of turtles. And then if you're talking tortoises, it's a creep of tortoises. So herd of turtles may be the saying, but if you're going to be accurate, Governor Ivey, it's a bale of turtles.
And of course, this is all we're talking about, what Governor Ivey has done here, and along with Dr. Scott Harris, during the coronavirus pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
Scott Harris spoke on Friday. His words were actually pretty hopeful. Also, Dr. Rendy Murphy with the Mobile County Health Department spoke as well on Friday. This is what she had to say. You may have heard it, or maybe you missed it. Here it is.
Yesterday, we had 120 people in the hospital with COVID-19. This is really good news. We've gone from, you know, the mid-140s earlier in the week now to down to 120 today, reported yesterday. So that's really good news that our hospitalizations continue to decline.
Yeah, and Dr. Scott Harris also, and I'm looking for the story that I have from him.
He said on
very
Friday,
hopeful words for sure.
Yeah, his exact words. This is the most optimistic that we've been, I think, maybe, since all this began. We see a path forward. We know how we're going to get there now, and it seems to be working. So that is the most optimistic I've heard Scott Harris since he's been holding this press conference.
I agree. And so it was last Friday morning, I believe, when you came in, we were talking pre-show,
mm-hmm.
and you said, I saw something in the Wall Street Journal, and here's what it supposed. It was an op-ed. And you said, what do you think about that story? And I thought, well, Wall Street Journal, even though it's an op-ed rather than just here's the facts, pretty credible source, right?
Oh, definitely.
You wouldn't think that they would, you know, put something that some loser just came up with, you know, some theory on where this is going to end or how this is going to end with the COVID-19. But it was, again, a very hopeful op-ed. We talked about it. You sent it to me. I read it, and we decided we need to talk about this. And it wasn't our lead story on Friday, but we made sure that every hour people were aware mm-hmm. of this guy's column in the Wall Street Journal.
Yeah, because I think it's fantastic news. And, you know, we've been talking pretty much since the pandemic began, and especially once we found out how many cases were in asymptomatic people, especially the younger you are, the healthier you are, you might get COVID-19 and not even know. And that means that the actual reported cases of COVID are just a fraction of the number of people who have antibodies.
I mean,
we've been going through this for a year now.
Younger people, also people in poor neighborhoods that might have had a touch of something, didn't know. But think about the younger people in those neighborhoods, never went to the doctor, never got tested, and probably have got had coronavirus, not big on the symptoms. So they didn't know. They were not tested. And also remember this, early on, tests were not available.
They weren't.
Remember that?
Yeah, it took a long time.
It took a long time, probably into May, before we really could, a lot of people could get tested. Mm-hmm. Therefore, what he is saying is, there's a lot more people out there that have got the antibodies than we're giving credit.
Yeah, and the number he breaks it down to, he said testing has been capturing only, and this, when I say he, I should explain who wrote this article. It's a surgeon from Johns Hopkins School of Medicine, Dr. Marty McCary, and he broke this down into some stats that he says are factual. He says testing has been capturing only 10-20% of the infections, and that depends on when during the pandemic someone got the virus. So like you said, remember when they started rolling out testing, it was almost like the rollout of the vaccine.
Right.
Where we were reporting who had tests, how many tests they had available.
That was the big deal at the time, was getting tested. Think about that. For a long time, you know, a couple of months in, it was hard to even get tested. During that time, who might have had it and never got tested, and it was never tested positive, that would now be among those that have got, you know, a form of antibodies in their bodies.
So this surgeon, Dr. McCary, he said about 10-20% of the infections had been captured. And then he applied what he calls a time-weighted case capture average of 1 in 6.5 and multiplied 28 million times that. And he said that means that about 55% of Americans have natural immunity already to this point.
That's a much larger number than we've been led to believe.
Then he starts adding in the vaccination numbers. And he said as of last week when he wrote this article, 15% of Americans had received their vaccine. And then I am saying this, not Dr. McCary, but if there's a little bit of an overlap over people who have had the virus and have gotten the vaccine, let's say 10% of Americans have gotten the vaccine that had not yet caught the virus. According to his numbers, that would mean 65% to this point have natural immunity. Then you add in the vaccines that should be available to Americans by the end of March. I think it was Dr. Scott Gottlieb who said there would be about 250 million doses available by the end of March. And this Dr. McCary says if that's the case and if enough people get the vaccine, we could have herd immunity by April. And that's just the most optimism I've heard since this began. Now, if you're wondering what the length of time having the virus, how long you go before you're not immune anymore. I think it's different for different people. But what he says in this is that if you've caught it before and you have the antibodies, you could catch the virus once again, whether it's 6, 8, 12 months, maybe a few years, you might catch the virus again, but it might not be as potent of a virus if you've had it before. They actually did a study on survivors of the Spanish flu. So the 1918 Spanish flu, they still found memory cells 90 years later in 2008, memory cells in people, that the cells remembered what that Spanish flu virus was like and was able to fight back against the virus even 90 years later.
That's
in some form or fashion. You might still catch it, but your body will at least know what it's catching and kind of how to fight back. So according to this doctor, he says herd immunity by April.
Where are we wrong to be optimistic? Let us know on the text line 3430106 if you think we're full of baloney because we choose to get excited by that guy's news.
Yeah.
But everything's been so bad for so long. Why not take the opportunity to get worked up about something in a positive way?
Amen.
Let's get to that. Dave real quick before we get to a break. Dave, hello.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are y'all today?
Doing great, my man.
I take issue with Governor Ivey.
Okay.
She mentioned that the politicians are like a herd of turtles, but turtles don't move unless they stick their neck out. And when was the last time you saw a real politician stick his neck out?
Wonderfully put there, my man.
Y'all have a wonderful day. Maybe us herd of turtles will get immunity.
There's Dave sitting us straight to, not too many politicians like to take the big stand on things, right?
No. Good call.
It's 8:46 at FM Talk 106.5. One more segment with Dan Brennan, Dalton Orwig, and then on to the Jeff Poor Show a little after 9 on FM Talk 106.5. FM Talk 106.5, Dan Brennan, Dalton Orwig at 8:51. The U.S. Space Force has a serious role to play in the modern world. Its stated mission is to train and equip personnel to defend U.S. interests in space. Given the increasing military and economic importance of space, the USSF is likely to grow in importance. But a quick internet search of Space Force shows that most people, for most, the Space Force is more of a meme than a military branch. It has been the subject of jokes on Saturday Night Live. It was also a Netflix. It was a Netflix special or like
series,
a six-part series that was hilarious.
It was, yeah. It was
Space
really
Force.
I loved it.
It looked very. It did. It was not flattering to Space Force.
No.
Really funny. But in any event, we thought Space Force was kind of coming our way here in the state of Alabama, up in Huntsville, because of what Donald, President Donald Trump at the time did on the 13th of January.
That's right. So I guess just over a week, actually, if it was the 13th of January, exactly 1 week before Joe Biden's inauguration, that's when Trump made the decision that Space Command would be coming to Huntsville. And we've been reporting since then. Not just officials in Colorado, but they've been the loudest about this, are upset that Huntsville ended up winning the Space Command Center, because that's going to be a huge economic plus for the state, whichever state that ends up in.
Yeah, exactly. So we assumed it was ours. Trump now out of office. Who makes the call?
That's a great question. I don't know if it would eventually be
Joe Biden
that makes the call, but these politicians in Colorado, just as sure as we are now that the Space Command would come to Alabama, that's how sure they were that Colorado Springs would be getting the Space Command. And, you know, it kind of makes sense because the Air Force, this is like an U.S. Space Force is like an offshoot of the Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
The Air Force is right there in Colorado Springs, or at least Air Force Academy is.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it would kind of make sense if they did put the Space Force there in Colorado Springs.
But how about the NASA and the aerospace interests that are in
Huntsville?
Already in Huntsville.
Yeah.
And they've got a claim.
Yeah, and if you're going to be, you know, taking off for space, be a lot easier to get up there from either Alabama or Cape Canaveral, one of those two, than the mountains in Colorado. But these politicians in Colorado feel like this was retribution from Trump. He, you know, he held a rally there last year in Colorado Springs.
Have you ever known Trump to hold a grudge?
Not once. He's been known to maybe hold a grudge once or twice. But he was holding this rally for himself, but also he was trying to get Cory Gardner reelected.
I remember.
In Colorado. Gardner actually lost that reelection bid, and Trump did not win Colorado. They actually went pretty decisively for Joe Biden. So now the politicians and military men out there in Colorado are saying that Trump gave the Space Force to Huntsville because Alabama voted for Trump and Colorado did not. And now the Inspector General of the Department of Defense, which is, of course, under the Biden administration now, says that he's going to review the Trump decision.
Mm.
So to me, and we'll have to see what Jeff Poor thinks about this coming up in his show, to me it means that this might not be going the way we want this to go. I think it's very possible that the Biden administration pulls the Space Command Center out of Huntsville and instead decides to put it in Colorado Springs.
We know a little about this from 10 years ago or so with the tanker decision, where it looked like Mobile was going to get it. This is all pre-Airbus. So Northrop Grumman, along with the French company, were going to be making the tankers, kind of won it fair and square, we thought. And they even were going to have a big presentation downtown at the Riverfront Convention Center. And this is crazy because that Monday they were going to have a ribbon cutting.
They were that ready for it.
Shelby and I were going to be the MCs of the ribbon cutting.
Wow.
And so they were that ready and it got ripped away. Somehow they didn't see it coming. So in some way, at least we have an experience of understanding how the state of Colorado feels.
Yeah. So that was, what, 7 or 8 years ago that happened?
A little bit longer.
And it was that close to a done deal.
Well, it was that close. We were only going on what everybody was telling us.
Yeah.
And the people that were in the know were very certain that it was going to happen. And suddenly some little switcheroo. I mean, they were all set up downtown with a presentation, with a kind of like an opening of the curtain, and here you go. Congratulations to us. Whole thing had to be canceled. I remember it was on a Friday afternoon.
I mean, that's if they do pull Space Force, that's just brutal news, and it could be the start of a lot of things not going Alabama's way, because we spent a lot of last week talking about Senator Shelby kind of stepping down and not going for another term as senator, and whoever ends up winning that seat alongside Tommy Tuberville will have a very young, in years, Senate delegation.
Inexperienced.
A lot less sway regarding national matters, so that would be a huge loss for the state.
Yes.
Also, earlier we were talking about near-death experiences. That story I read, he said, 5% of Americans have had a near-death experience that has changed the way they live life? And Brian said, I witnessed a bank robbery when I was 8 years old. The purple ink exploded on the man before he left the bank. He went crazy and started screaming and waving his gun around.
Ooh.
That's a pretty intense moment there.
For such a little guy, too, 8 years old.
Another guy that rodeoed, like I used to, said, good morning. In my younger years, I rode rodeo. I was hung up for 18 seconds on a really ticked off bull. I dislocated my left shoulder, almost broke my wrist on my left side, had two broken ribs and a bruised lung.
Whew!
That's tough.
Yeah.
I wonder if that changed your life at all after that, if you were living differently.
Yeah, it changed his life in this way. He quit rodeo.
Yeah. And then here was a near-death experience reported over the weekend. An Alaska woman using an outhouse said she was attacked by a bear from below. Came up. She says, I got out there, sat down on the toilet, and immediately something bit my butt right as I sat down. I jumped up and screamed when it happened. They took snowmobiles. She and her brother and his girlfriend took snowmobiles out into the wilderness February 13th. And his brother heard the screaming, went out to the outhouse, and the bear, she thought she'd been bitten by a squirrel or a mink, she said. And it turns out it was a bear underneath the toilet seat that I guess reached up and bit her right there on the butt.
We can say this much about Alaskan bears. They don't have much discretion as far as where and how they attack somebody. That would be, you know, any sensible bear would say, you know, if you want to attack somebody, hey, Yogi, get over here. Don't do it while they're on the toilet.
It seems the situation.
That's kind of nasty.
He may have been hibernating inside that outhouse.
Okay.
And he woke up when it started raining, I guess.
Or other things. FM Talk 106.5, Jeff Full Show on the way. 8:59, and Dan, Brendan, Dalton, Org. We'll do it all again tomorrow, man. We'll see you then.
Oh, yeah.